Follow along with us this week as we examine the after effects of chemicals being dumped in the sewers that don't propagate Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. This week, we return to the nation of Korea to more than make up for the fiasco that was Yongari as visionary director Bong Joon-ho takes a crack at monster movies, political commentaries, and one of the best family dramas of all time. This is Kaiju vs. History, The Host.
Welcome back to Kaiju vs. History. This is your host who lacked protein during his development when it was most important, Miles. And joining me is a bronze medaling archer who is quick to draw and slow to release, Patrick. Patrick, could you have made any more convoluted introductions this week?
I don't think I could have, honestly. I tried my best here.
Yeah, I was looking at that one side on the scene and I was like, hold on, this is end?
Yeah, well, it's a complicated intro for a complicated movie, Miles. We're talking about
complicated
2006's The Host, classic family versus monster movie. You know that formula. That this is honestly one of the most original films, I feel like, of all time. I just went the first time I watched this movie, and to go back a little bit in history, I think I watched this movie something in the neighborhood of like 16 years ago. Last week, you talked about how you watched Gamera the Brave, like right when it came out on DVD. I was in such a Korean filmmaker heaven because I had a Netflix subscription for their DVD rentals, and they had access to just about everything. I'd gone through the Revenge trilogy of Park Chan-wook's films like Old Boy and the Sympathy, the two films, the Vengeance films. And I either got
Mr. Vengeance and Sympathy for Lady Vengeance.
I got this recommendation from a friend because I'd not heard of Bong Joon-ho before this, or it was recommended to me maybe from, you know, what I was already renting. But I remember, I think I just watched the trailer and I was like, oh yeah, well, we're going to do this. This looks crazy. It looks like a crazy monster movie. The poster gives very little away. And when I got the movie, I was just blown away. I just did not know what to expect from this movie.
Yeah, when this one came out, the mid to late 2000s was like mecca if you were into Japanese and Korean films, because the DVD era was, I think, probably the best time for an American fan. You had actual companies like Tartan Palisades releasing like the Tartan Asian Extreme line.
Yep.
Dimension had, they usually did it under the Dimension Extreme banner, depending on which movie it was. So all of the horror, heavy action and genre films were in great supply. Now, The Host, I remember this was getting buzz from a very early, I mean, because Bong Joon-ho already had a reputation as a good filmmaker.
This is and his third film, I think, at this point.
I think so.
Maybe like a short film or like a independent film. And this is like his third major studio film.
I know Memories for a Murder had already kind of done very well and done well critically.
And Barking Dogs Never Bite is his, I think, first full feature. And also has one of the stars of this film.
So I remember being excited because, you know, and at this point, because I had not seen Gamera the Brave yet. At this point, it had been a couple years since I had seen kind of a giant monster movie like that. This is before Cloverfield came along. This is before. So we're in this like couple year period where you really haven't seen anything like this. And I remember Fangoria, I think maybe it was the first one I remember seeing talk about The Host, perhaps. I remember there was this buzz about this decorated filmmaker who was dipping their toe into the large monster movie territory. And I was excited about that because, you know, I mean, these days, hearing that a celebrated indie filmmaker is going to do a big budget thing is pretty common post Batman Begins. Mm-hmm. Like Christopher Nolan kind of set that on the way. And so now someone does a great movie, a studio tries to snatch them up and see if they can get it. And sometimes you get a Barbie and sometimes you get, well, everything else. So I remember being so excited for this movie, and I feel like I don't even think I had Netflix rentals, but I feel like I went to Best Buy like the week of and purchased it. Like I just, I did a lot of blind buying then because, you know, DVDs were not crazy expensive at the time and I was still in school.
Say I bought it afterwards, but I don't think I have it anymore.
I don't know if I still own my copy.
At one point I was on like three DVDs at a time from Netflix. Same. I was just like burning through.
Yeah.
Because there were so many, you just couldn't get anywhere else on television, like anywhere, you know?
Yes. I mean, the big draw for Netflix was that like a lot of times they had a lot of the rare stuff and stuff you couldn't get. I mean, most of my Netflix like disc purchases were movies I couldn't find at Best Buy or anywhere else. I didn't want to specially order them. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, this was a wild time. Cause I mean, I did a fair show of blind buying, but I did the same thing. I always had like, you know, a line of discs coming in. And I think I even kept that because I don't think they started double charging you for streaming at first, because it was still just such a new thing and there wasn't a whole lot on there.
No, I found it recently, but you actually had to have a disc for streaming.
I had the PS3 disc. Yep.
So funny. But yeah, no, at first it wasn't anything extra. And I actually went back and I was like, is there a way to find your disc history? And up until a few years ago, you could like request it from them and to download, but I don't think you can anymore. You know, that's been gone for so long, the site, I think. But that was a great time for my film education. You know, right after college, I had free time and free money and got through a lot of movies that way.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, a little bit of social media aspect because you can like have friends and like give, you know, suggestions and things like that. So I kept up.
Oh yeah. I forgot you could link up with your friends and look at their list. And I could see what my buddies were going to rent. And I would often look at things based off what they wanted to. Yeah.
I feel like we're dating ourselves so much. It's like, you know,
I'm
only
okay
like
with that. I don't care.
18 years ago, but it feels like we're talking about like dial up AOL discs or something.
Again, I mean, it's so funny.
I'm almost getting on, I think, about 19 years of being a Netflix subscriber. Like almost the majority of my life I've been giving them money, but it has been a very fruitful time. Anyway, so let's get back to the host.
Yeah. the reason for the season.
Yeah.
I guess before we keep on going, Patrick, what's in a title?
So I actually really disliked the title when I first heard about the movie because I didn't feel like it was very evocative of perhaps what it was going for, but there's, you know, some stuff to talk about with it. The original Korean title is Gwae Mal. It translates to just monster, but the actual figures in Korean are both monster and water or river, I think. So it is like, you know, water monster. But yeah, just monster is like the actual translation when you put them both together. And the host, first of all, it's a bad title retroactively now because there's like a couple other movies that are called Host or The Host. So it just doesn't work that well. But The Host is a great title, I think. I think, you know, the plot of the movie, you find out that it is the host of this virus, something akin to like a bird flu or an avian swine flu.
Mm-hmm.
That's what shuts the government. And the military shuts down the river access, and is like the majority of the plot points of the movie kind of come about because of that. And that's a very interesting idea. It isn't as interesting as a giant monster, though. So it's, you know, the Korean title is still very good. But yeah, both of them also kind of refer to obliquely the actual monster of the movie, the real life villains, which is like the military industrial complex or the United States military, who create the monster, cover it up with this host virus story, and then continue to endanger the public and basically torture this family throughout the film. a great title. Maybe I enjoy the English one a little bit over the Korean one, but it did have a couple of different titles throughout the world when it came out. In Vietnam, it was known as Han River Monster, so it was very specifically about the River Han in Korea. In the Finnish title translated to The Secret Beneath the Surface. I don't know if that was a film release or if it was like DVD, but there's some interesting translations out there. Most of them are either The Host, which is, you know, a translation of the English title in native languages, or Monster. The Host, the Creature, was the Portuguese title. It's like they wanted to have their cake and eat it too, so they took both the Korean and the Before we go on, Miles, this is such a good movie.
Yeah.
We talked about Gamer of the Brave last week. I'm a huge Bong Joon-ho fan ever since, you know, this film. Obviously, he has gone on to win the Oscar for Parasite, which is a tremendous film experience. I still like this movie more. And also, you know, I love Snowpiercer. Snowpiercer is so good.
Mm-hmm.
It is his only adaptation, I think, but it works very well. And he obviously puts his own slant on it. And it is also like a, you know, a Hollywood movie, which is so weird. It's definitely the odd one out from his catalog, but we're going to get another Hollywood movie from him supposedly next year.
Next year, I think. Yeah, got pushed back to
a sci-fi film with Robert Pattinson. I'm so excited about that.
Yeah, I'm, and apparently they seem to have had a great time together. Yeah, I also liked Snowpiercer. I also heard the show was really good. It kind of went kind of more closer to the manga, but I had a great time with Snowpiercer.
Getting to watch that, man.
I do too.
He get in on that.
This was the first of his movies that I had seen, and yeah, it got me on the kick to watch, you know, his films, which I have loved. I'm a big defender of Okja, so not many people talk about it. The movie he made on Netflix, I bought the Criterion Blu-ray for that one. I think it's a great film.
It's a lot of fun. It is a child's kind of monster movie in a lot of ways. I don't think it's actually. But it's
technically a kaiju, but it's not a daikaiju. And honestly, same with this one. But
well, this one is very much a horrific monster.
It absolutely is.
It doesn't really get a name in the movie. The Guaimol name, I think, is in marketing materials, and they call it, you know, the creature and things like that. But it definitely has a very very interesting origin story, which is to pollution as radiation is to Godzilla.
Yeah, and based off real events.
Based off real events, we'll get into, but it's also, I think, some of the best monster designs of any movie ever. It's so interesting. It's so weird. It does things that I don't think you'll ever see done with a giant monster anywhere else. The way it moves around is just so unique, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely put this really in the kaiju adjacent kind of stuff that we've watched, that these movies are important to kaiju cinema, but may not actually be kaiju cinema, like your Tremors and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But this is absolutely a movie that we need to talk about. I mean, and this is a movie that, look, even the people that we don't usually agree with love this movie, because it had some critical political statements by the United States, was lauded by North Korean authorities too.
Yeah. Well, if you're going up against the U.S. military, I imagine they might enjoy
it.
Yeah.
In a rare form, because they typically, you know, even though they like South Korean filmmakers, as we have previously seen in kaiju cinema,
they enjoy snatching them up.
Yeah. But this movie is certainly something special. And, you know, there's a familial essence to a lot of Bong Joon-ho's movies I mean, there's certainly, you see it in Parasite, you see elements of it in Okja, not as much in Snowpiercer, obviously, but it's very certain. This is definitely a family movie first that I guess we need to start getting into it, because, yeah, just everything about this movie just really works for me.
Well, let's talk about the first scene, the opening scene, where we get to see a mortuary, a funeral kind of laboratory, and both an American, and we'll find out American who works for the military, and a Korean mortuary assistant. The head of the military is, or this mortuary is asking the assistant to pour into the drain gallons upon gallons of old formaldehyde. And maybe it goes bad. I don't know, but formaldehyde that might have been like leftovers from the Korean War, you know, just things that they couldn't use anymore. Yeah, told him to just pour it down the sink. This is something that actually happened in real life. This is an event that happened only 6 years prior, February of 2000, where Albert McFarlane, who worked for the U.S. military, but very importantly, I suppose, was not a uniformed officer. He was not a part of the military. So he worked for a mortuary for the base in along the Hongang River. And it became known as the Hongang River Formalin Discharge Incident, where 470 bottles, 20 gallons of formaldehyde, the U.S. military admitted, were dumped down the drain. And there's some questions about, you know, they formed like a search, an answers committee after this incident. But Albert said that, to defend him a little bit, it was mixed into like hundreds and hundreds of gallons of liquid that was kept on base and was treated before it was discharged into the river. That being said, obviously, I don't think that was up to protocols. And obviously, since 2000, we've had hundreds and hundreds of other stories about, you know, burn sites outside of military bases and like the massive environmental impacts of U.S. military bases around the world and in the treatment of their waste and things like that. But yeah, this incident caused a lot of protest in Korea by environmentalist groups. Originally, McFarland was fined by the Korean government $4,200, but that was thrown out, and they tried him and found him guilty, I think, in absentia. Like, I don't think he was there because the U.S. military refused to give him up, even though he wasn't a part of the military. He was acting as an employee of the military, and they said the Koreans did not have jurisdiction to imprison him. He was going to be imprisoned for 6 months, I think, like a half year's imprisonment for this environmental infraction. Never happened. He continued, I think, to serve in the military for another 19 years in and around Korea. And I guess the only real punishment Miles he had was he had this role in this movie, a very popular movie a few years later. He's played by Scott Wilson in this film, the you know, and I guess an unnamed member of the mortuary.
Yeah, this movie starts off just making you like just pissed.
Yeah, which is great. Very Bong Joon-ho kind of style. Scott Wilson, I didn't really recognize him because he's so clean shaven here, but he was in The Walking Dead. So it's a very short scene, but it's so important to why this movie was made, because this is the incident that inspired the script and inspired the creation of this monster in this story, which I guess, thank you, those chemicals, Mr. McFarland, because like, if you hadn't been a big jerk that we wouldn't have gotten this pretty perfect movie. So yeah, that's the basic history behind the river formalin discharge incident. And yeah, Bong Joon-ho started writing the script just a few years after, I think, the fallout from this. And he would go into production, I think, in 2005. Let's talk a little bit about the film itself, Miles. So you mentioned it was a family drama. I think it's probably one of the best families we get in any kaiju or kaiju adjacent film. I love them so much.
It's hard. I mean, they're, you certainly love them. I don't know if they're one of the, they're dysfunctional.
Oh, gosh. Yes. I mean,
calling them best needs to come with an asterisk.
That is, I mean, if you watch Parasite, it's kind of the same thing. It's like they shouldn't work together, but they are all dysfunctional in different ways, you know?
Yeah.
And it's really, honestly, one of my only complaints about the movie is like, I kind of want more of them before the monster attack. Monster attack happens very early in the film, in a scene that honestly changes cinema for me because it's so good. But yeah, you've got the father figure, the grandfather, the young daughter who is really the heart and soul of this family unit. And then two, I'm guessing single siblings who in different ways are a lot more successful than their older brother. I believe the father played by Song Kang-ho is the eldest sibling. And yeah, that's all of them, right? It's a family unit of five. Yeah, we get introduced to them kind of slowly, and some of them just kind of like offhandedly referenced. Like, we don't actually get to see the younger brother, who's an unemployed former student, former activist, Nam Il. We don't get to see him until after the daughter gets taken away. Do you have a favorite character, Miles? They're all so good, but that's a hard one, right?
It is. It is very tough. I mean, honestly, if I had to pick a it's tough because Hyunseo is kind of the best character in a sense.
Who?
The daughter.
Yeah. She's one of the best kid actors.
It's Hyunseo, right? Right. That's how you pronounce it.
Hyunseo. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't get to spend a lot of time with her, but her kind of survival skills and how she is kind of adapting to being captured by the creature is great. She, I mean, just draws your sympathy in, but she's very brave. She's a very strong actress. I mean, to pull that off, honestly, and you wouldn't know it when you first see her. It's like you're expecting kind of a little kid performance, and she gives a very nuanced performance. I really love Baiduna as Namju, the archer.
Yep.
I think she's, I mean, I think the entire family is really, really good. It's hard to pick a favorite.
I mean, as far as like both comedy and drama, Bong, or the grandfather of Hyunseo, played by Byun Hee Bong, is so good. I love him so much. He doesn't feel like an actor. He feels like just someone that they actually pulled off of the riverbanks of the Han and got to be in this movie. He just fits the part so perfectly. There's so many elements. His final kind of like monologue where he's talking about, you know, he's talking to his two other kids as they're falling asleep in the cart, but talking about Gandu, the father, and like why they need to treat him a little better because he's, you know, grieving for the loss of his daughter. And it works so well. We get to see kind of how he had a bit of a harder upbringing than maybe they did, having to play Siori surviving by like raiding local farms where they grew up. Really good stuff. The entire cast of this movie is just amazing. The acting in this film, I don't know if it's, I mean, I it definitely is, but he's a great director. He gets so much, I think, from these performances. And for the most part, I don't think any of these actors had done anything like this before with like blue screen or, you know, CGI monsters. But right. the reactions of these actors to these scenes, it's great. It's some of the best acting in any of these kind of kaiju movies as well. I think the best quote unquote character in this movie, though, is the Han River itself. We don't really get almost any shots, I feel like, are in a stuffy studio, like maybe some of the hospital scenes.
Right.
But this movie is such a great example of real world filmmaking. The riverbanks of the Han are where I would say like 90% of the movie takes place. We get to see four different bridges in the film, and they all, there's like railway bridges, there's like passenger, there's like walking bridges. There's so much different locales, and they shot in the actual sewers along the riverbanks. Like the entire sewer set at the end is not a big construction. Like, it is an actual sewer that they found to film in, and they had to get like tons of shots so they didn't get tetanus or like other crazy diseases. And supposedly some of the conditions were pretty rough smell wise.
Oh, I can imagine.
And yeah, the characters, I mean, maybe some of the makeup or costuming was because they were actually in the water in some of these sequences, and it was not, you know, always perfectly treated river water. They're going through the sewers. Do you want to talk about that? Go right ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, and the movie itself has a pretty simple setup. You know, we open up with that sequence of the stuff getting dumped into the river, and, you know, just simple communication, because we hop over to present day. Or no, we see some fishermen, one of them kind of gets bit, mm-hmm. which, I mean, you can interpret, oh, that's where it gets its hunger for human flesh as a little tadpole, I guess.
Yeah, that seems... isn't super needed, but you do.
It's 100% unnecessary.
It's fun though. It's from an angle. It is humorous. We also get to see a salary man jumping off one of the bridges, and he gets to see the creature before he
dies. Even though that bridge doesn't look high enough to kill yourself,
it looked like a good 40 feet. It could have. I think he was just diving into the waters, but
I don't think he was just diving into the waters. Like, he was going for a midnight dip. I think the interpretation is supposed to, he's going to kill himself because he does have a nice life.
Yes. But like, no, he's definitely killing himself, but I'm saying, I don't think he was expecting the fall to kill him, but he dies in a different way. I think he gets like ripped in half, right? He gets eaten by the monster. Because there's a bunch of blood that comes up. So, and then later on,
I don't think we see what happens to him, because I don't think we get our first look until the next day at the park at the food stand.
I think there's a reference to a half eaten body in the sewers later on. I thought that was supposed to be him, because they find half of his body.
Oh yeah, no, we're supposed to interpret that he gets eaten for sure. Yeah. Half of him, but the creature doesn't like jump up and bite him or nothing. We don't see the creature proper until
one of the best sequences in any movie.
Yeah, it's a great sequence because it's a normal day at the park. You know, family, well, I guess the grandfather and Gangdu are running the food stand. And it's a typical day until someone notices something weird's out in the river. And so everyone's kind of gathered. And then, like, in kind of a misdirect, you're all looking out. And then all of a sudden on the side, you see that thing's popped out and is just barreling towards you.
Yeah, it is a full daylight action sequence, and honestly most of the sequences where we see this monster are in full light. It's never like lurking in shadows, and it looks great. This movie is 18 years old at this point, and for the most part these effects hold up so well. And it is a mix in parts of CGI and a practical monster for some bits and pieces of it, mostly CGI in parts, but the CGI works really well. I don't know how else to explain it. It fits in this universe, and it, because the monster is so gangly and weird looking, I feel like some of what we would attribute to it not looking great can be attributed to its weird movement style. You know, it works so well for me. Every time I watch this movie, I'm surprised it holds up as well as it does.
Yeah. I mean, like, the thing is, like, with certain things, it's a CGI monster. And a lot of people are, and this sounds kind of snooty, but a lot of people give this movie leeway because of who directed it and the career that director's had since then. If this director had been anyone else and the movie been completely the same otherwise, they could have been more prone to shrug this off. That sounds kind of shitty, but like at the same time, like I know that to be true for some people. As I've said, CGI doesn't really bother me, especially if you have a story to tell. And this movie has a great story to tell. The CGI honestly looks really good for 2006 as well.
Yeah. And it's a great monster design. We didn't talk about Guaimul much yet.
Yeah.
But like I said, I love this monster. I think it's so cool. It's got kind of like a predator mouth that opens up, and it's honestly so sexual looking. But it's like so many skin folds, and some of the original art is like much more fish like, but it looks weird. It's a little
well, it also feels like some sort of like crazy mutated fish too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
it's two-legged and one long-tailed, and it's, I guess we kind of get that with skull crawlers later on, but
a little bit.
It the way it moves, like the way it swings from the bridges, it's so unique. It also obviously can swim super well, but it doesn't feel like an actual animal. And it's one of the reasons why I really do consider this a kaiju monster, if not in size, in its design elements, because it is so unique. And I can see it, you know, just being a little bit bigger and just being a full kaiju movie. But one of the earmarks of a normal kaiju movie is, can the monster, is it large enough to knock over a building? And it technically knocks over the snack stand, which is a building.
And the snack stand's, I mean, it's more like knocking over a camper.
Well, it also fits inside a trailer at one point in this opening sequence, so which
I will take umbrage with that.
Yeah, but like we said, if Tremors can count, I think because of the setting, the
theme, I agree. This one is very much like a Tremors.
Yeah, but there's no
Kevin Bacon character just cursed up a storm the entire time.
Well, in so many of these movies, the main plot of the film would be about how the military takes this monster out, and they are so much more concerned with containing the story that we don't really see the military like hunting this monster at all, you know?
Well, and we're also told that the fear is less the monster and more of the virus that this monster has. And we're never actually given real information. Like you have as much information as like the family does, which is interesting way to go about it, because like it also gives them the fact that they kind of hint that this was probably misinformation by the United States to begin with.
Oh, yeah. And then eventually once they capture Gondu and are about to crack his skull open to quote unquote prove that there's a virus, another great veteran actor, American kind of actor, Paul Lazar, admits to his Korean counterpart that there's no virus that they've technically found, so they're still looking for it. And Gondu is like,
no virus? English,
no virus?
That sequence is so good.
It's so good. It's both hilarious and heartbreaking, which is like this movie all over the place is both of those things. The first sequence where they're at the shrine to the victims of the monster is so sad and so funny when they all fall down grieving, yelling, and like attacking Gondu. It's great. It's the part of this where you realize this movie is going to be a great mix of serious and humor, and it rides both of those lines so perfectly well, just like Parasite did, and it won an Oscar.
It does. So part of the main story is that Hyun-soo has been taken by the monster, but we find out that she is not eaten or dead.
Yeah. You get a phone call in the middle of the night. And that's the start of like act two, basically, of the film.
Yeah. Here's my problem with this. Since I have ever owned a cell phone, when someone calls, it says who it is and it says what time they called. And no one bothers to check the phone. No one believes this guy. But if he just flipped up his phone and said, well, look at the timestamp at the incoming calls. I mean, look, so I love everything about this movie. But like that one aspect just annoyed the crap out of me.
His family believes him, and they do have a scene where they're trying to explain to a police officer that she is still alive, and they don't believe him because they think he's got, you know, head trauma. He's got, I think, some damage to him.
There's a 30-second way to show whether or not he's right or wrong.
Oh gosh, that's a great sequence though, when he's trying to explain to the officer and he's like, the cell phone is my daughter, I'm the monster, and he puts the cell phone in his mouth and spits it into the trash can. It's so good. Yeah, I agree with you. There are flaws in this movie, Miles, and it's they're so glossed over because there's not a wasted minute of screen time in this film. I feel like that about almost all of Bong Joon-ho's films. Just like every moment you are given a visual feast, you're giving some of the best acting performances. Honestly, the only problem I have technically with this movie is I just want a little bit more of the two other siblings. We get a scene where we talk about how Honcho is embarrassed because her uncle showed up drunk to her school. And I was like, why don't we see that? But it's because they want to get to this rampage scene early on in the movie.
Well, yeah. So that's the thing I think about this movie is what really makes this movie like fire at all cylinders is the fact that it's just under 2 hours. And that sounds long, but this movie covers a lot of ground. And yeah. While, yes, I do want more of all of that, because they are able to give enough contextual storytelling with the way they treat each other and just some small pieces of dialogue, it's enough to move the movie forward. Do I want some more of these moments? Absolutely, because I want to see this family and how they function as a unit, because we already know they're kind of dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. And I want to see them. I want to see them in multiple situations. Cause we get this really cool, like on the run bit where like, mm-hmm. we find out that like, you know, gosh, what's the brother's name?
Namil.
He was a very bright college student, but was a political activist. And so I don't even think he graduated, or maybe he graduated.
He graduated, but he didn't do great in his studies because he was so focused on being
on the politics,
a political agitator. And we find this out very late in the film that he's like, he's made like dozens of Molotov cocktails. And,
So I love that aspect, but he also, he hooks up with a friend and they kind of talk about it. And cause his friend's like, you were way smarter than I was. He was just more involved with getting involved in the politics, which is really interesting. And you have this whole sequence where he kind of, I feel like it's almost like a Jason Bourne sequence. So like he's sneaking into this office building to get this information about the cell tower. Like, okay, if it hit here, what aspect would it have covered? And
a bunch of guys are coming for the reward money for capturing him. It's a pretty awesome part of
it. It's a film. Great scene. I mean, honestly, that's a movie in and of itself. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, like, you know, Namjoo is basically just going monster hunting.
Mm-hmm. Her sleeping in the bridge is so cool. I really want more of her character. Like, we don't really get a reason for her archery problem. She's a bronze medal winning archer, and I just want just a little bit, like one or two more scenes
on that aspect. I do agree with you, because they make it such a point, but they never really give us anything as to why. We see that she kind of tries to overdo that, because like she takes a couple quick shots at the monster, but like she's also one of those archers that like shoots high. It's not like a Robin Hood situation where you're like, mm-hmm. shooting, like, I don't know why I did that on camera. No one can see that.
I saw it.
But I agree. I think she's probably the most underdeveloped character, and it would have been nice just to have a little more meat to chew on. Cause I feel like all the other characters, including him, so get that, but
yeah.
And she doesn't.
Yeah, she gets activated. The brother, kind of Namil, kind of sacrifices himself, falls off a bridge, but texts the location that Hunsu is, and she goes to hunt the monster and gets immediately kind of knocked to the side. I'm like, oh, come on. Like, I really want just a little bit more with her. Do you have a favorite scene from the movie? It's a movie of favorite scenes, I know, but
I'm trying to think of what my favorite scene is, because like, unlike a lot of the movie, I mean, because he's not a full Daikaiju, there's not a whole lot of like, I mean, yeah, you got the park carnage, but everything else is more Jaws like.
Yeah, I was about to say the park scene is the most kaiju part of this movie, is you know, people running in terror from this giant thing that is stampeding through, they've never seen before. And some pretty gross out kind of, you know, actions of them attacking this thing. And it crushes this American guy's arm and takes him, or it's about to take him, but takes someone else.
I do love the kind of, honestly, you mentioned it earlier, but the finale where you see like throw the Molotov cocktails,
mm-hmm.
and like the family kind of acts as a unit, because then
he drops the last Molotov cocktail
and then Namjoo like has the flaming arrow, and then Gangdu like spears it. It's great. It is a great sequence, and kind of shows like, oh yeah, each member of this family could not have done this without the path that they were on, you know.
It's yeah, it's amazing. It is, I would say, beyond Jaws in the final kill for this monster is set up over the previous 2 hours of the movie. And we get a little bit of a callback in Gandu's, you know, spearing it with the sign. He has got this thing in pike format to stab right through the monster. And then you see him kind of let go of it, and it's just stuck in the air. And you realize that the beast is completely dead. is taking it. It's kind of a great callback to when Hansu is trying to climb up this clothing rope and lets go of it midair. And you realize the monster has grabbed her with its tail. Just really cool filmmaking all over the place.
Oh, I absolutely agreed.
The end of this movie is so good. I think the part of the movie that stuck with me the most in multiple rewatches now, it's not maybe the best scene in the movie, but it's when they've been hunting through the sewers. They've gotten the map. They've gotten the shotguns from these gangsters, and they go back to the snack hut to eat and refuel. And there's just 30 seconds, not 30 seconds. There's 10 seconds of silence as they're waiting for their ramen to cook. And then they start eating in silence, and eventually Hansu sits up from behind her father and her aunt and is there with the family eating like nothing's happened. It honestly, it makes me want to cry every time I see that part of the movie, because you realize it's they're doing this. They're here for her, and she's with them in spirit. And they realize as they're eating that she doesn't have anything to eat right now. So it works on so many levels, and it's so beautiful. They start feeding the actress tons of food. It's great. It's one of those things that if you really dig into his movies, he does some very cool kind of magical realism filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there's nothing else like that in this movie. That one scene, though, just works so well. It's so impactful. Like I said, every time I watch it, I'm just like, oh my gosh, Bong Joon-ho.
Yeah, and I mean, it also delivers in that same way when, you know, at the end of the movie, when they rescue the kids, yeah, and they basically adopt the little boy that she's been looking over the entire time.
Yep.
And him and Gandu kind of share a meal, and then they're mm-hmm. listening to the news, and he's like, just turn that off. Let's focus on eating.
Yeah, well, the background is explaining everything, the American military and everything. And yeah, it's great.
CG, was that the kid, the little kid?
Yeah, he's a great actor. His older brother who gets killed is great. All the kid actors, the actress that plays Hansu is just amazing.
Yeah, she's fantastic and has gone on to continue to act. She is actually
Ko one of my Ah-sung. Favorite.
Yes, she's in one of my favorite anthology series, Midnight Diner, Tokyo Stories.
Right, yeah.
I think she was in the Netflix ones, but I love that series. It's so good.
She was also in Snowpiercer.
Yes, she was. I don't think she was in Parasite.
No, she was not.
Would have loved to have seen her, but because she's fantastic and certainly the heart and soul of this movie. I believe this was her first. It wasn't her first acting role, but it was her first film role.
Right. Yeah. Well, she knocks out of the park. Everything she gets to do in the sewers is amazing. And half the time she's acting with this monster. I think she has probably the most scenes with the actual monster.
Yeah. And
trying to avoid it. And she does great.
Talking about favorite scenes, one of mine is when she tries to escape by jumping off the monster's back. That whole sequence is so thrilling because you see that you don't see that she's caught, and you just see her kind of give an expression, and you're wondering, oh, you're expecting something to have impaled her or something.
Mm-hmm.
They slowly reveal that she's not been attacked. I mean, she's been captured, mm-hmm. but I think that is genius directing there. I think that shot does not work as well under any other director. Mm-hmm. And because you are just holding your breath to see what's happening to this poor little girl. And it's that little part is one of my favorite sequences in the film.
This movie won the Best Picture at the now defunct Korean Film Awards. Bong Joon-ho won Best Director. It won Best Cinematography, Sound, Visual Effects. It won a lot of awards in Korea. And of course, as we said, the director would go on to win the Academy Award for Best Director. And it won Best Picture as well for Parasite, out over two of the director's favorite co-directors or colleagues in Tarantino and Scorsese. What a year for movies.
Yeah.
Parasite winning was so crazy.
And I think it's a bummer. I think probably because the Korean Film Awards were like so new. And then when the global recession happened, like it just kind of fell apart, which is a bummer because yep. I would have liked to have seen more of what got awards because the 8 years they existed were at least pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah. Great time for Korean film. I mean, now it's still a great time for Korean film.
Oh, no.
Boy, howdy.
Korean
2000s were so good.
The Korean film, not the industry, but the Korean film scene is fantastic. There's so much good stuff. And it was a good time for people to get introduced because a lot of the big ones happened. Your revenge trilogy, but specifically Old Boy, become the international hit that it was. This movie,
Miles,
I'm more thinking of like all the horror movies that I've watched. So
This one really dips into horror as well, which is interesting.
I was thinking of more like, oh gosh, I'm trying to think of the director's name. He's very, very famous. And I think he did Tale of Two Sisters, Kim Ji-moon.
Right.
Tale of Two Sisters is really good. But I Saw the Devil is one of my favorite revenge movies of all time. And in fact, has, you know, cast members from the Vengeance trilogy. But man, it's an incredible, incredible movie. I highly recommend everyone see it. It's tough. I mean, it's a serial killer revenge movie, but it is really, really good. But yeah, I mean, this is a time where all this stuff is being introduced to us. So, I mean, it was a killer time to get into Korean films because, I mean, like you said, still, because, I mean,
yep.
tons of great movies are still coming. And luckily, we have a little bit more access to them than we used to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Song Kang-ho was also in Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance. He was great in that movie.
Yes.
And, you know, he was great in Parasite. Like, he really has
Parasite.
He's one of the best actors in the world, not just Korea.
No, he's a phenomenal actor.
But in this movie, I feel like he's so far afield from some of the other characters he's played. Like, the ability to do comedy and drama so well here. It's great.
You know what? Part of it's the costuming, too. Like, I don't know if it works as well if without the blonde hair. Yeah, exactly.
The blonde hair does it. It doesn't seem like it makes a lot of sense for the person that the father is, but it makes sense for who I think Bong Joon-ho envisions the father is, you know?
Yeah, because initially he's kind of aloof, kind of childlike, and at the end of the movie, you know, he's got his natural hair.
I was about to say, it's also not just blonde hair. It's blonde hair that needed to be retouched like 2 months ago, you know,
yes.
Like blonde tips. It's so good. I think I remember reading something about the decision for the hair, but I didn't write it down. This movie's is great. Roger Ebert, in his review titled Attack of the Giant Amphibian, gave it a three and a half stars, which is very high for him, I guess. He really enjoyed the movie. He obviously pointed out the family dynamics, the comedy, things like that. I am so bugging out because this movie, retroactively, people don't love as much. This has a 7.1 on IMDb and 72% on Rotten Tomatoes for audience score. Over 100,000 ratings on Rotten Tomatoes. 3% critics score, which that makes sense, but
yeah,
why don't audiences like this movie, Miles?
I think I do. I mean, this is the era. This is now the internet age is fully here, and whenever something is well loved and has been well received, after X amount of time, there is this slow. Well, you always have the contrarians. You always it wasn't that good because everyone who pops in after the hype, you know, gets to kind of tut tut at it. I think there's a lot of that. And then there's some people that like who have come from the, you know, nose up in the film world who watched this monster movie because of who directed it and because of the accolades and were like, oh, it's still just a monster. You know,
yeah,
it's I mean, there's also a lot of that.
It has basically the same score on Letterboxd as all the rest of Bong Joon-ho's films, 3.6 to 3.8, except for Parasite, which for the longest time had like a 4.9 stars or something.
Yeah, like that. But it's, you know, eventually the people will start giving it down just to do it.
Yeah, it's 4.6 now. That is still extremely high, but at one point it had like the most 5-star ratings out of any film on Letterboxd. But yeah, 3.6 stars on Letterboxd, which is right in line there with some other critics. But yeah, Miles, this movie almost had a sequel. There's a talk of a sequel from a different director for many years. There was talk of an American Hollywood remake as well. And I am so happy both of those never happened. This is close to a near perfect standalone movie. I mean, all of its movies are standalone, but in its time and its place, it's crazy that this movie came about. This feels very ahead of its time in a lot of different ways, but yeah, I don't see how you're remaking this and doing any better.
No, an American remake is not it. This is distinctly a Korean film. Mm-hmm. It's a Korean voice. It's a Korean story. Make your monster movie. There is something different about making, you know, Godzilla or Gamera or any of the named King Kong, any of the named monsters that have like a 70-year history. That's one thing. This specific story, no, just watch the movie. Just watch the movie. It's great. And I understand. I'm not going to get in the whole conversation because if you're listening to this podcast, you can watch a subtitle movie. I feel like that. I feel like our listeners can make that covenant. And if not, like, there's probably a dub of it. But like,
yeah, I'm pretty sure there is.
This movie's absolutely worth checking out. It does not need a remake. It does not need a sequel. This movie is a singular expression about a family. And like, maybe if they did it, like, no. I don't even want a K-drama out of it. This movie is perfectly fine the way it is. It needs no other discussion other than discussion about the movie itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so good. My personal enjoyment, if we're going to get, let's get right into the rating. It's a 10 out of 10 for my personal enjoyment. Each time I watch this movie, I experience something new. I notice something new. I get something different from it. I've probably seen it a dozen times somewhere in there. I'm a huge fan of this director, but I'm, as much as I love him, I think I love this movie more than his other films. You know, I think this one's just perfect for me. I love the drama. I love the humor in it. I love the horror. I love the monster. We didn't even talk too much about the monster. It was designed by Weta Workshop, and it looks cool. It looks cool on screen. It is really, I think, a once in a lifetime kind of film that it fits into the kaiju genre. It fits into a lot of different kind of niche areas. Yeah. It is a Korean movie through and through. Yeah. So I think it cracks my top 10 list of just like favorite films, not kaiju films, favorite movies of all time. So personal enjoyment, definitely a 10 out of 10. What about you, Miles?
So yeah, I'm with you. My personal enjoyment is a 10 out of 10. This is a phenomenal, phenomenal film. I love it very, very much. I love that we get probably the best Korean monster movie that we're going to get.
Yeah, I mean,
the other options until we have are
Shin Young-Gary.
Yeah, no, I think this movie is it's a creature feature masterpiece. I mean, as kaiju tangential cinema, it's hard to like, you know, really kind of place this in kaiju ega, but like at the same time, this as a movie and personal enjoyment, yes, this movie fires from all cylinders. It gives you a phenomenal cast of flawed characters who are all interesting. They all add something to this movie. The movie clips along pretty nicely. It's got some great tension. It's got a young, hungry, brilliant filmmaker who chose to make this kind of movie and knocked it out of the park. This is one of my favorite creature features, you know, and I'm a fan. I mean, you saw how highly I rated stuff like obviously Tremors, but Deep Rising. And like, I like these mid-sized creature movies. So they're often very entertaining, and this movie is no different. So yeah, I cannot highly recommend it enough.
Yeah. As far as kaiju adjacent, I think this is the best of them. but for its technical, what do you think about that element?
So I do got to mark it a little bit for the technical. I think, you know, we've kind of, for me, talked about how some areas of the script probably could have flown a little bit better and maybe fleshed out a couple things.
Yeah.
It's by no means. I think the CGI looks really solid. The creature design, very solid. The actors, I mean, if we were just judging by the acting, is pretty 10 out of 10 work. There are a couple of logic holes that, while they don't ruin the movie, sometimes take me out, again, the cell phone thing. So mm-hmm. I think this script probably could have used a little, like a second pass, like things that would have been easily just, you know, just need another pass, a little more time on it. And that's really it for me. I mean, and as such, the movie's a 9 out of 10 in terms of technical, because the movie looks great. It's beautifully directed. The script is smart. It's using a monster story to tell a larger political expression. Mm-hmm. And I think it knocks it out of the park in almost every other section of it. So what about you?
You said 9 out of 10?
9 out of 10, yeah.
I'm right there with you. I think there's some minor flaws here or there. I mean, the biggest one being I just wanted more of it.
Right.
As far as directing goes, it's 10 out of 10. I do think, and we didn't talk about it because it's like not super standout, is the music in the movie is a bit simple, especially when you compare the soundtrack and the instrumentals to the director's other films. After mm-hmm. this movie, I think the same guitarist / composer Lee Byung-woo works with the director on Mother, but he moves on to another musician for basically the rest of his films, Okja, Snowpiercer, Parasite. And those soundtracks more stand out in my mind. Like I can't even like think of the music in this movie, like trying to like drum it up. So there's parts that are definitely, yeah, like I said, I think if we had a little bit more time, this could have been the absolute most perfect movie ever. It's just not there technically. So I'm also giving it a 9 out of 10. For where it ranks on its importance in kaiju cinema, I have to be very fair and kind of rate it the same way that I rated things like Deep Rising and Tremors, but it's right there with them and them exclamation point, the movie. You know, these are kaiju like creatures that the movie shares enough kind of DNA with the thematic things that are going on in kaiju movies. I feel like this one definitely deserved to be on our list. And I was just excited to talk about it again. It is a great kaiju, if not, a towering daikaiju. I kind of wished that the monster had continued to grow, because we did see it as like a tadpole and then, you know, later on as a much larger creature. I kind of wish we had gotten at the very end. It was like maybe too big even to get into the sewers. But yeah, I feel like this is kind of, as like you said, Okja is kind of a similar space, but Okja is more family friendly as opposed to monster. But yeah, in design wise, this monster also feels very kaiju. So I am dropping it down to where its importance is as a kaiju movie to an 8 out of 10. I feel like if you're going on this journey and you haven't watched this movie, it's not the most important to get to, but I think it should still be on people's list for adjacent kaiju films. What about you, Miles?
So I do think this movie comes at an interesting time. I mentioned it last week with Gamma the Brave, where, you know, with the end of Godzilla and, I mean, even with the King Kong release, you know, the genre is kind of quieted down for and will for about a decade in terms of being a real global vibrant genre. And I mean, trust me, we still got plenty of movies to talk about. This genre doesn't go away by any stretch of the imagination, but it's quieter. And there are a handful of movies between 2005's King Kong and 2000's legendary Godzilla film that I think do kind of keep the conversation going about, you know, this being an interesting genre. A lot of people are really finding their fandom with kaiju cinema at this time. You know, the Millennium era had just finished, but like a lot of people like us, you know, were not only coming of age or getting into their 20s and stuff, but also had their very own income and their very own connection to the internet and the ability to watch and purchase these movies for the first time in their lives without like having to rely on parents or whatever. So these fandoms were really starting to spread. So movies like this, I think, have a very, very high importance. I gave Tremors high marks because I felt like it was the first American film for me that really kind of hit the mark. I'm not going as quite as high because this one is certainly more in the mid-monster conversation, but I think it can't be stressed enough, like what it means to have such a celebrated young new voice dipping their toes into the giant monster pool and knocking it out of the park the way that Bong Joon-ho does. And not only that, but I think this is an excellent movie. It reminds people that these movies have important themes to work with. It's not just about destruction. Like, notice how when we're asked our favorite scenes, it's not about like what miniatures got knocked over or what fights happened. We're talking about, like we did last week, the scenes that happened between the humans. Even though both of us talked excitedly about how cool the monster was, like, it's reminding people that you can tell really amazing stories and that your storytelling is not any less just because there's a giant monster in it. And having a voice like this demonstrate that, both not only with the family angle, but with the political angle, I think is really, really strong. That said, it is its own thing. It doesn't choose to use a lot of kaiju cinema. It's hard to say a lot of kaiju films from here are inspired by it, but I do think it's an important monster movie. So I'm gonna knock it a little bit higher than you, but like not by much. So I'm gonna stick with a 9, just because I think this movie is important in terms of the conversation, and also, you know, having a really, really great South Korean entry in monster movie cinema. And it's certainly a kaiju movie. It's just not a daikaiju movie, really. But yeah, I think this movie is pretty important. And even though it's not to the scale as other ones, because I came into this episode giving it the same score you did. But the more we talk about it, the more I'm like, now this movie means a lot to me. And I think it's pretty important.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, we are going to have some other films that are more kaiju than daikaiju on the list. Like I said, you know, we've already name dropped a few that we've looked at that feel like they're about to go into giant monster territory or something along those lines and play around with the ideas. And, you know, I think after this, we'll get a little bit more of those kind of films here or there pop up. And yeah, I don't know if, like you said, this inspires other kaiju movies, but this film definitely inspired a lot of other kind of filmmakers, I think, in similar veins. And, you know, eventually we'll get a Del Toro giant monster movie. We'll get other like super big directors in my mind doing kaiju films, which is,
oh yeah,
which is exciting. I mean, at this point, for sure, Bong Joon-ho is like one of the biggest directors that has taken this on outside of Peter Jackson, of course, with King Kong. So between 2005, 2006, I mean, what a great focus on these giant monster movies, elevating the genre up a little bit. So yeah, I can see your score here. So, I mean, we're both in the same neighborhood as our final scores come out to about a 9 out of 10, and the podcast final, a 9 out of 10. Averaging our two scores together, which is about where I saw this going. It's hard to take any points away from this movie in any way, shape, or form. But yeah, this movie is very close to being absolutely perfect. For me, like I said, I think same thing with you. I finished the movie and I was like, I kind of immediately want to watch this again right from the start, you know, just watch it on loop.
So, it's a fantastic film. I'm definitely happy to have revisited it. It's actually one I had seen fairly recently because I had done it with Drew on the More You Nerd. We had done a non-Godzilla Kaiju month, I think, before we started even doing this show. And I think we did the first Gamera Heisei movie, Troll Hunter, and I cannot for the life of me remember what the fourth film we did was. But yeah, this movie holds up all the time.
If you're out there, you have a podcast and you want us to watch this and talk about it again, feel free to where can folks reach out to us, Miles, because I'll talk about it anytime anyone wants to.
You can email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. You can tweet to us at Kaiju Versus History. You can visit our website, kaijuversushistory.com. Please rate and review our show, comment, share with your friends, let us know what you think. Check out our Letterboxd account, Kaiju Versus History, and see all of our reviews and watch our list of films. Patrick, what are we doing next week?
Thank you, Miles. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, everybody out there. Rate and review us where you can. We're going to catch you next time when we return to the jungle and we return to King Kong films just in time for the extended release of Peter Jackson's King Kong. We have another animated film in the Kong animated series universe. Join us next week. Tune in for History versus Kong Return to the Jungle.